Jesus has some harsh things to say about what it means to be a disciple. In fact, both that and the Galatians lesson hold together on the theme of the cost of discipleship. And some of what Jesus says in the gospel seems pretty sharp and pretty surprising. Let the dead bury their own dead. Really, Jesus? This just doesn't sound like the Jesus that you and I find attractive to worship. Often in situations like this, and particularly as Jesus is heading himself up to Jerusalem, knowing that he will suffer death, Jesus says things in very stark ways, over-exaggerated ways. They're there for shock technique, and they ought to shock us into thinking, what are the things that are required of us if we are to be Jesus's disciples? Certainly, it will be required of us that we demonstrate a kind of love that is different from the world. We're not called just to be moral people. We are to be moral in special ways, giving of ourselves self-sacrificially as Jesus gives himself, fighting for justice and fairness, fighting for honesty and truth, taking on so many things in our world and making a witness to Jesus Christ therein. And of course, Paul seconds this thinking as he admonishes the Galatians to follow Christ and even talks about the ways in which Christ is manifested in our daily lives, specifically in those 9 things that he mentions are the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, forbearance, self-control. I've lost one somewhere along the line, but you know the kinds of things that I'm talking about. Christianity is a lived religion. And sadly, many people who claim to be Christians think of it as a religion of their head. It's what they believe is important, and belief is important, but only to the degree that it causes us to change our actions and be a different person in the world. Which is why the book of James says, faith without works is dead. These lessons admonish us to let Christ shine in our very lives. If you think about it, the only way in which people in our secular culture come to know Jesus Christ is through you or me. They meet Christ in us, or perhaps they don't. Most people in our culture don't own a Bible, aren't going to look to the Bible for answers. They look to us for answers. They could perhaps watch a biblical movie. They might get a fairly true or a fairly distorted picture of who Jesus is, but that is not a substitute for the relationship that is necessary if people are to see Christ. And they are to see Christ in the degree of our self-sacrificial love. It calls us to go out on the line, to really administer our finances and our priorities in ways that it will be clear that we are defending the environment. We are defending the civil and social rights of human beings. We want to share in a world in which there is enough food for everyone, but it's not always in the right place. We want to assure that people will all be equal in God's eyes, as they already are in his eyes, but we need to manifest it. This is a very hard job, and it calls upon us to make real sacrifices. It may not mean that we can't say goodbye to family. It may not mean that we can't bury our dead, but it does mean that we have to change and be different people. Over the last year and a half, and continuing for the next half year at least, I have been working in the Diocese of Virginia, albeit living here in Baltimore, being an assisting bishop and working part-time. And up until this Sunday, which is finally a free Sunday, so I can be with friends here at Redeemer, I am usually in churches in Virginia and often conducting confirmation. But even when I am there as the bishop not confirming, the congregation renews its baptismal covenant because the bishop is there. And that has caused me to do a lot of thinking about the baptismal covenant and how it applies to my own life. And I'm aware that the first question that the bishop asks in the baptismal covenant is, do you reaffirm your commitment to battle evil? And the second question in the list of five questions that comes after the creed is, will you resist evil? Now, that's often interpreted by people as being a personal thing. They will themselves not fall into evil. But in fact, it's both personal and corporate. Christianity is a corporate religion. We can only be Christians together. No one is a Christian on his or herself, or by his or herself. It means that we need to be speaking out about evil and be quick to point out evil in our world. I don't know about you, but I have been very sobered in recent time. I don't remember a time in which I felt evil was more palpable than it currently is in our world, in our nation, here in the city of Baltimore. There are many ways in which evil takes its form, but I don't hear a lot of Christians really speaking out in ways that I think our baptismal covenant calls us to speak out and to live out a different example. And one of the things that has bothered me most is that we now live in a culture of lying. Lying has become normative, not just for some of our political leaders, very notably, but lying has become an integral part of our culture. I don't know about you, but I was raised in a house where the bottom line was telling the truth. When I did something wrong, I knew I'd get into trouble and I'd be punished, but I knew if I lied about it, the punishment would be far more severe. If I owned up to it, the punishment would probably be less. So it was a lesson I learned. The lying that takes place in so much of our public life these days is also not innocent lying. It's not little white lies, you know, like the kind of thing that you tell someone that the dress looks lovely on her when in fact it really doesn't, but you decide that the more loving thing is to say that it looks great. Those are fairly innocent lies, but many of these are not, and they're predicated on a very faulty ethic. And the ethic is the end justifies the means. Anything to bring about the end that I desire is permissible. And it doesn't have to be a selfish end, although it often is. So there are people who deny the reality of global warming while people's lives are at danger simply because their priority is keeping alive the fossil fuel industry, or their personal sense is, I don't want to see my life compromised. So that's their end, and any means thereto is permissible. To demonstrate this from a more distant vantage point, we saw that in the Third Reich in the 30s and 40s. A decision was made by leaders under Hitler that the Aryan race needed to be purified. That was the end. And the means that they used was to send about 8 million people to the extermination camps. About 6 million of those were Jews. The means were so horrific that even if you could support that particular end, the means had poisoned the end. Ends and means are inextricable. If we use corrupt means to get to our ends, we will necessarily have a corrupt end. Now, in our own time, as recently as this past week, we have again been debating about all of the refugees on our border. And this is a topic that is debated very much in Europe as well. And although I don't hold this point of view, it is defensible to say we don't want any more refugees. We simply don't want them. We can't accommodate them. We won't accept them. But the means that we have used in this country to reach that end have been totally unacceptable. So that we have families separated. We have children living in filth and squalor without enough to eat and without medical care. We have purposely set up our courts in such a way that people coming to come legitimately as refugees into this country have to wait month after month after month in Mexico on the border, waiting to even be heard by a judge. These means are evil, and they need to be talked about as evil.
Amen.
And that means that the end, no matter how much you might want to justify it, that end cannot be justified by those means. But I don't hear a lot of Christians speaking out about that, or about dishonesty, or about all the other things that we see and know in our heart of hearts have little to do with Christian values. And the reason, I suspect, is that we are all afraid of offending people. And that's where the gospel today really calls us to be more adventuresome and true to that gospel and Christ. Yes, we will offend people. I know that sometimes I offend people when I preach. I'm often, when I preach a sermon like this, which I think is a kind of prophetic sermon, have people say to me afterward, "Well, you know, you're motivated by party loyalty." I do have a bias. I have a Christian bias. I am intent on trying to live into the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I understand that living into that gospel will cause me to make sacrifices. That some of the things that I espouse may coincide with some of the policies of a particular party is not my problem. Quite honestly, I don't have a lot of faith in either of our political parties in this time. But I do have faith in Jesus Christ.
Hello.
And Christ calls upon us to speak out against dishonesty and corruption and all of those end justifies the means where the means cannot be justified because the ends that have been employed are evil. We need to be speaking out. We need to be voting out people who espouse those things, and we need to be making a stand as Christians. That, I think, lies at the heart of today's gospel. It isn't about burying your father. It isn't about not saying goodbye to your family. It's about taking a stand that will cost you something. Mm-hmm. That cost might be in how you reorder your priorities in life. That cost may hit your pocketbook as you decide, I'd rather be more sharing so that others may enjoy this good life and not quite as selfish. The call to be Christian is to get rid of enough of the ego and the junk that fills all of our lives that the light of Christ might shine forth in us. So that others hearing and seeing us might say, where does he or she get that kindness, that perseverance, that self-sacrificing love? And might, in fact, see Jesus in us. Discipleship is always costly, but the joys of discipleship are also not to be underestimated. A sense of new worth, a sense of purpose in life, a sense of God being with us to guide us and help us. These things are hard to measure, but they are also attributes of what it means to be a disciple in Jesus Christ. Amen.